Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And this is episode 85, everyone. Welcome to episode 85. Of course, this being a multiple of fives makes me think of our homegirl.
Miss Indica.
Miss Sister Indica over in, I think she's in Arizona now. That girl moves around so much. She has the Joy Bomb podcast right here on Podomatic, so go check out Sister Indica's Joy Bomb, and she's obsessed with multiples of five. It's been a while since we've thought about you, or mentioned you at least, here on the air, Indica, so this is going to be a big one for us, you guys. Later in this broadcast, we have the first of two big halves of a incredible interview with Oscar winner Patricia Arquette. Patricia Arquette won the 2015 Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her role in the film Boyhood, and the interview that we will have later in this episode is probably one of the most powerful interviews that I've done in a really long time. Of course, she comes from a perspective of having a transgender sister and having gone through all of that experience, and Pearl, it's a really good interview. Mm-hmm. It's really, really good. Plus, we're going to have up-and-coming music producer Griffin on with us. He's got he's amassed several million views on YouTube for his remixes of some of our favorite artists, people from Tove Lo and just a lot of artists. And he's venturing out with his own North American solo tour as well as his own new music. So we'll talk to Griffin later in this hour as well. So, Pearl, how was your weekend? How was your Folsom Street Fair weekend, girl?
I don't think I did much, really. Like,
did you go to the fair?
No. Oh. I actually didn't go to the fair. I was going to go just to get some food, because y'all know I check out the food vendors.
Bitch always goes for the food.
Right. But I didn't go this time. I spent my weekend at home cleaning my house. Then I had a friend visiting from New York that I went out to see and had a couple drinks with. But that's it, girl. No
shenanigans
nothing.
For you.
None of that mess, girl.
Well, I did go down to the Folsom Street Fair. Just for those who are living outside of the Bay Area, Folsom Street Fair weekend in San Francisco is one of the biggest street fair events of the year. And tens of thousands of people come to San Francisco for what is a very fetish-oriented street fair, you know, down on Folsom Street in the South of Market District of San Francisco. Normally, I do not go. This is something that most often I only go if somebody is paying me to be down there representing their product or if there's a real reason. This year, I went because Hood Slam Wrestling has a wrestling event every year at Folsom, and I decided I was going to go down and show my love and support for the people of Hood Slam. Shout out to AJ Kirsch, also known as Brosif Joe Brody. He and I connected on Friday night at an event for All Pro Wrestling, but I went down to see them on Sunday afternoon, and I got to wander around just a little bit, but honestly, Pearl, I just don't like the way I don't like the way street fairs make me feel, and
And how is that?
Well, so I think that, especially a street fair like Folsom, where everything is very hyper-sexualized, it makes me feel a little uncomfortable, not because of the sexuality of it, but because of the fact that I was thinking about this. Why do I feel weird about these street fairs or whatever? And I think it is because I have a real desire for an intimate, romantic type of relationship. And seeing everybody on there, like, hyper-sexualized makes that kind of emotional connection feel a little more distant from me. I think that's because in the gay community, like, sex is much easier to come by than romance to begin with. And for me, I just felt all of that, and it felt like people are much more interested in some capacity and putting their sexuality on display than, like, connecting romantically. I don't know. It may be misplaced, but that's how I felt. And basically, I was there for a little over an hour, and I just got the fuck up out of there. I was like, yeah, I came and said, I can say I did it. Whatever. I saw my friend Gerald Borjas down there and his partner, John, and that was lovely. I saw Race Cooper. We've had Race on the show before. Saw gorgeous, gorgeous Race Cooper down there. That was very beautiful and nice. I mean, I saw a number of friends throughout the community in that area. Saw Jeff Millard, Mr. San Francisco Leather down there for just a moment. But overall, it's something where I just don't feel compelled. I've never really felt compelled to participate in these kind of street fairs or even Pride. I know that they're popular. I know people love it. People come from all over the world to attend Folsom Street Fair. And I applaud them for doing that. And I'm glad that we have a city that allows for that. But honestly, I mean, I just don't need to see all that many dicks and asses and tits and cooches. I mean... And I actually, the funny thing was, like, Folsom Street Fair is known for being LGBT focused and whatever.
But it's really, it's very inclusive to everybody.
It is very inclusive. And every sex act I saw being done actually at a public level was all between a man and a woman. I saw some woman giving a guy a blowjob on the sidewalk.
All right.
And I was just like, eh. And then they had some woman hooked up to, like, a dildo machine, and she was... Wow. It was...
They always have some amazing, like, really interesting, different exhibits for you to go and see.
Yeah, it was something. I love it. It was something. I mean, like I said, none of that stuff really makes me feel uncomfortable. I'm just like... So this is one of the things that does make me feel uncomfortable, specifically about Folsom. So, Folsom is very definitely a clothing optional event, right, you guys? There's lots of people down there in various stages of dress or undress. You get people who are literally, I saw one person who was in kind of a latex outfit head to toe, meaning like even their face was covered and they were chained up and they were being pulled around in this like rickshaw by somebody. Not an inch of that person was uncovered or visible. Then you get other people who are like stark naked, except for like a pair of boots.
Booty naked, girl.
Yeah, like a pair of boots and a cock ring, and that's their outfit. Well, I was waiting for Hood Slam to start, the wrestling show that I went there to see. And so I decided it was very warm on Sunday. So I found a place in the shadows or like in the shade and sat down on the curb. You know, it's in the street. So I sat down on the curb and I was waiting. And about that time, my drag daughter, Sandra Ono, she didn't text me. So I looked down at my phone and I was typing out a response and I became aware that there was a group of people who had come close to me, but I wasn't really much paying attention. And then just as I looked up, like two of them sat down, and just as I looked up, a person who was wearing nothing but a jock strap was sitting down. And as he sat down, his ass crack was like about 2 inches from the side of my fucking head. Mm-mm. And I was over it. I mean, it's like, boo, that's fine that your fucking taint is hanging out, but I don't need to be all up in your sphincter like that, you know? It was a lot. And then shortly after that, I was like, I gotta go, bitch. I'm out of here.
So did the Hood Slam thing even start?
Hood Slam did start. They were doing, it's really cool because they do wrestling shows every hour on the hour. They'll do like, you know, like two matches or something. But I think between just my general feeling of malaise and the fact that it was, like, really warm, I watched 1.5 matches, and then I was like, okay, I'm out of here. Plus, I just gone and seen an incredible show for All Pro Wrestling on Friday night, and so I was kind of like, you know, I'd caught up on my pro wrestling, my live wrestling. So I do know that if you're in the Bay Area and you're interested in checking out Hood Slam, they are going to be at DNA Lounge on Sunday, October 1st. Showtime is, I think, doors at 2, show at 3. So go check them out. It's going to be right there in SoMa.
That's this Sunday, you guys.
And it's like, Hood Slam is probably one of the coolest wrestling promotions I've ever seen. They have like...
They have a little bit of everything in there.
Yeah, it's like wild and crazy. They have people wrestling in drag and they've got...
Burlesque dancers. Yeah. They've got all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's a show, you guys. So I encourage you to go check it out. If you're remotely interested in pro wrestling, go check out Hood Slam at some point. If you don't catch them this Sunday at DNA Lounge, they are the first Friday of every month over in Oakland, down by Jack London Square, so they're easy to find.
And, girl, you can look them up right online. Just look up Hood Slam.
Yep. Google Hood Slam. And anyway.
And that's all one word.
And AJ Kirsch is probably going to be on our podcast at some point in time. He won The Rock's national competition for independent wrestlers who are able to cut the best wrestling promo. Wow. Like, you know, when they get in the ring and they talk or whatever. Yeah. So he's got these great pictures with my future husband, The Rock. Mm. Oh, speaking of people who, look, what made me think about this is The Rock is obviously already taken, you guys. And so, did you read about Wendy Williams?
No, that's not going to happen.
You didn't read about Wendy Williams?
No.
Okay, you guys. So we've mentioned it in the past, like, I worked with Wendy Williams. I thought she was a fucking nightmare. I did think her husband was kind
of
hot.
She's kind of like, Wendy Williams is very Kim Kardashian territory for me. Like, if it says her name, I'm not going to be interested in looking at it or watching it or whatever, really.
Right. Well, that's understandable. A lot of people live for Wendy Williams. For the past, like, 25 years, Wendy Williams has basically made a name for herself by trash-talking celebrities.
Paris Hilton.
So, whatever. She, before Wendy Williams became a television personality, she was on radio station down in Atlanta, and basically she became famous for having these, like, online, like, these feuds mm-hmm. with lots of celebrities. She shit-talks every single episode. She, you know, she'll pull up, like, photos of people or, like, talk about the headlines and then, like, give them fucking advice like she's a guru and all this stuff.
Right.
Well, train stopper, bitch. It came out yesterday on the news that her husband has another girlfriend shacked up in a huge mansion, like, 10 miles, just 10 miles from the mansion that he shares with Wendy Williams. He has, like, a whole other family. And
a whole family, not just like, a wife, but a family.
Like a girlfriend, and like, I think that it's like a whole other life, basically.
Like, this girl has kids.
I think so. I don't know that for a fact, but it was in the headlines that her husband has another family. I don't know if that's his kids or maybe her kid, whatever. But on top of all that, I was looking at like some photos about this, and I came across, if you follow me on Twitter, you might have already seen me tweet this. I came across this photo of Wendy Williams and her husband at the beach. This is exactly... Okay, first of all, I'm not... I don't really like the idea of body shaming or whatever. We all say shitty things about other people and whatever. But at the same time, this is a woman who, I've already prefaced this, has made a fucking career for ripping people a new one and talking mad shit about people. And so I run across this photo of Wendy Williams in a fucking bikini with her husband at the beach, right? Pearl, look at this photo. Zoom in on the legs.
Oh my goodness.
Zoom in on the legs and speak close to the microphone. You're going to gag.
Wow, girl.
I don't know if Wendy... Oh my God. You guys, in my tweet, I said it looks like her pantyhose are sagging, but she ain't wearing no pantyhose.
That's weird.
Her...
Is this real?
Yeah, it's real. It looks like the entire bottom half of her body was deflated. Like...
That's awful. It looks like she possibly had surgery and then had whatever she had removed or something, and the skin just kind of didn't recover.
Yeah, it looks like... you know, she's been larger in her life, but she's never been, like... huge, but her skin is sort of sagging as if she lost like 200 pounds.
Maybe not that much weight, because I know girls here in the city who have gotten issues from, you know.
But people,
but it doesn't look like that.
But the people that I know who have like that kind of saggy skin issue have lost like in the hundreds of pounds range.
Yeah, but I mean, it's worse than that, and it's usually in the belly too.
Right. Well, I mean, so also, you guys, Wendy Williams has got this really bizarre tattoo across her stomach, and this is what I'm thinking. Have you ever seen when somebody has lost a lot of weight and they get skin reduction surgery?
Uh-huh.
What happens, everybody, is that it looks almost as if they cut you in half and then remove a lot of the skin to pull it tight and then sew it back up. So I'm wondering if that ugly tattoo doesn't cover a major scar where she might have had this reduction surgery, and then the reason her knockers are so huge is to fill up extra space up there, and then...
I don't know. I think she's gotten breast implants quite a long time ago, because getting implants doesn't change. You would need a weight loss... Weight loss and breast implants don't necessarily go together.
Right, but what I'm saying is that if she had all this excess skin up here, filling that would, you know, she wouldn't have to, if you fill it, it doesn't have to be removed, the skin. And then...
I don't know if it works like that.
But if, of course it does, honey, because, like, when they stretch out, like, a lot of people at times they'll put implants in, like, where they inject silicone or whatever to stretch the skin to allow for a bigger implant or whatever. And if you've already been really heavy or bigger or whatever... the skin, it makes the tissue larger. So if she's filled this up because it was like hanging, looking like a water balloon, and then were to cut here and then, you know, they would, whatever, it would cinch her waist a little flatter, but then she would have to cover a scar. But there, I don't know that there's anything. Anyway, the point is, you guys.
It looks really bad.
It looks not good at all. And I mean... I
would definitely get that checked. Well,
how about it looks like a big old bruise there on the side of her, too?
No, that looks like a birthmark. I have some markings on my body like that.
But at any rate, like... But
her legs,
girl. And how about her hands look like an 800-year-old woman?
That's what happens when you get older, girl.
She's only 53! I mean, damn! She's only 53. She got the legs and the hands of a 90-year-old, honey. Anyway. It's unfortunate. And... like, I definitely do not wish any harm upon people or whatever, but one has to imagine that if your entire claim to fame is really kind of trash-talking people, I bet you there's no kind of celebrities who are like, oh, poor Wendy Williams, her husband been cheating on her, and her legs look like a deflated balloon. Right. Oh, damn.
And, girl, that happens with everybody in life. Girl, if you are... one of those people that's all you do. No one's going to feel sorry for you once you come up looking a mess.
Yep. So, anyway, how about her husband look much finer in person than this? He was fine.
Was he?
Yeah. I mean, I think that he looks like he let himself go, too.
I mean, that's not anything I would hit.
I mean, I still probably hit it. But
I definitely would not. Let's see, if he was going to buy me a mansion 10 miles away, maybe.
But with her money, y'all.
That's fine, girl.
He's her manager. Like, that's his whole career. Girl, you really have some balls to have to, like, have a side chick and, like, doing all that. Knowing that she's your only bread and butter, boo. Oh, damn.
Yep. Good luck with that, girl.
But, and for his sake, if she decides to kick him to the curb, which... hopefully, I mean, girl, as much as she talks about people ditching their man and all this shit, she better kick him to the curb, or else she's going to look like the biggest hypocrite.
Right.
But he better hope that they live in one of those states where it's 50-50.
I hope he didn't get a prenup.
Yeah. So, and what sucks to me about this is they do have a little kid together. Actually, the kid's not that little. It still sucks that your parents were, like, in a fucking turmoil, but the kid's, like, 17 now, so.
Damn. Damn, that's a tough age to have your parents split.
Well, my parents split. My mom left my dad 3 weeks before I turned 16. Weeks before my 16th birthday.
My mom left my dad when I was 9, but...
I don't really think there's that any time that's really like, oh, this is the ideal time for my parents to split, right?
When you're grown. Yeah, but definitely, when you're grown.
But even when you're grown, like, then it's like...
when you're grown, you should not be as naive as when you were a child, sorry.
Right. Well, I mean, I definitely think that it has a different level of impact, but I also think that there's something that's just hard to adjust to being an adult who's now parents are not together if they've been together all this time.
I mean, if you're still living with mommy and daddy, maybe, but... Lord, girl, I'm not talking...
So, Also, I saw a couple of things relating to what's happening on television now that are kind of interesting. Both of these relate to the returning Voice, the TV show The Voice, which, by the way, The Voice, which beat RuPaul's Drag Race for Best Reality Competition Series at the Primetime Emmy Awards. They are back. They have on their panel of judges...
Jennifer Hudson now.
Yes. Blake Shelton returns, as does Adam Levine.
And Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus and Jennifer Hudson are the four panelists now, the judges.
Yeah.
I saw a recap of recent people who are auditioning or whatever, one of whom is a former NFL player who is out. His name is Isaiah Tualo. He's from Hawaii. I've actually met him a number of years ago. He wrote a book about his experience of coming out as an NFL player. What I did not know is how amazing his fucking voice is, girl. He was so good. He turned his chair. I'm trying to remember. Jennifer Hudson and Blake Shelton turned their chairs for him. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that he went with Blake Shelton. So, which will be very interesting. Then, this one was the one that slayed, girl. A young man, I mean, I should probably look up his name, but a young man auditioned, a young African-American man. Jennifer Hudson turns around in her chair, like, within moments. And then, followed by Blake, and then the other two eventually. So all four chairs turn, so he gets to choose between which of the judges he wants. And they're like, wow, like, you know, you're amazing. And then he says... they ask, well, tell us about yourself. And he says, I live in New York City. I got my start in the choir, but I'm also a drag queen. He's like a drag performer in New York City. And his voice is crazy. I'm going to look it up right now.
Do you know his name?
I'm looking it up right now. Drag queen on The Voice. Yeah. How about it pops right up? The 2017 Chris Weaver auditions... His drag name is Nedra Bell, or Nedra Bell.
Wow.
N-E-D-R-A-B-E-L-L-E. And here, like, this has got the side-by-sides. This is him out of drag, and this is him in drag.
Oh, cute.
So, he sang Try a Little Tenderness. Girl, his voice is everything. I watched it, I was like, gagged. So... They did not announce which judge he decided on. I think that's like a cliffhanger for them to, whatever, to bring you back or what have you.
Oh.
But.
Come on, drag queens reaching out to different TV shows other than RuPaul's Drag Race. The number one, I live.
So.
Like, yeah, RuPaul ain't about to get the award. Let me go with The Voice then.
Exactly.
I heard it though.
So, that's some of what's going on television. I've been trying to like keep up with some other things like. I don't know. Have you seen anything in the news that's been new and newsworthy for you?
Oh my God, girl. There's always something in the news. Unfortunately, it's all been tragic news. We almost had, there was an earthquake not too far from here this past weekend.
Where was it?
It was 5 miles away from the city in the ocean, girl.
Oh, Lord.
And it was a big one.
Woo. Well, I mean, in the ocean, 5 miles?
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been that big. We didn't feel it.
Well, girl, apparently it was. That's what it said in the news, girl. Fuck the damn news.
Pearl, hold on, y'all. Pearl's...
I'm just trying to go right
now. Pearl beat hoof. She's, like, getting some water out of the background or whatever. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment with more Party Foul Radio. Remember, support our sponsors, everyone from GuideToGay.com down under to Daddy's Barbershop here in the Castro. And get slippery with some Swiss Navy premium lubes. We'll be back in a moment. Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, Daddy's Barbershop. Located at 4102 19th Street in the Castro, Daddy's Barbershop was voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Go visit Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop. Daddy's Barbershop is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Ms. Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
And we are continuing to take a look at some of the headline news that is happening around the LGBT world right now. there's a lot of new gay or gay adjacent things that are coming to television very soon. Of course, Will and Grace is getting rebooted on NBC. Were you ever a fan of Will and Grace?
No, not really.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
I always felt like Will and Grace was more like a television show about gay people for straight people.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely know a lot of gay people who like it too, but the funniest thing is...
I don't really know many gay people that were into that show.
All the gay people that I know who are into the show are mostly into Karen Walker, the drunk, boozy pill popper.
Right.
Much more so than either of the gay characters.
And isn't she not even, she's a main character, but she's not a main character.
Well, she started out as less of a main character. Ultimately, it became the four of them. It became Jack and Karen, Will and Grace became, the four primary characters. And all four of them will be returning. Apparently, according to an interview...
I'm sure she would be a lovely interview.
Megan Mullally would be an incredible interview, and I'll see what I can do to get us on, or get her on with us. Of all of the people on that show, I think Megan Mullally is the one I'd be most interested in interviewing. Anyway, in an interview, Deborah Messing said that Deborah, who plays Grace, said that she insisted that in the rebooted version of it that Grace now be a feminist. I don't know what her political leaning was on the show before, but that's something that they're talking about. They're talking about anything relating to the rebooted Will and Grace. And honestly, it's not a big on my radar because I kind of, like I said, I wasn't really.
Yeah.
Are you watching by any chance the new Star Trek Discovery series?
Nope. I didn't even know that was happening.
Oh, I thought you might be into it because it's like sci-fi or whatever.
It's a television show?
Yeah.
No.
It's called Star Trek Discovery, and I've seen a lot of tweets about it online, and it's making a little bit of waves, I guess, because they have a couple of main characters in a gay storyline. So,
oh, sickening.
So that's something that's making news. Of course, we've already talked on this podcast before about the intersection between the LGBTQ community and, the Comic-Cons community and things like that. So that will be great for people who are in that environment to have something that reflects their, their thoughts or way of life a little bit more directly. So that's great news for people in that environment. Also, there is a gender fluid character on the newly rebooted Roseanne.
No way.
Yeah, that's what it says. A gender fluid, gender non-binary character. And it's causing people to be in an uproar. That group, Million Moms or whatever. 1 Million Moms.
What is that?
1 Million Moms is like a group that bitches about everything. And they're like, it's basically 1 Million Moms who don't want their children exposed to insert bullshit here.
Oh, girl, fuck that. Get off this planet if you don't want your child to be...
I mean...
Wrong planet, honey.
I mean, I understand the idea of parents being protective of their children or being mindful of what their children consume in terms of television or the media or whatever. That's fine. If you don't want your children to be exposed to that, great. How about this? Don't fucking let them watch the TV show.
Right.
Amen. Period. End of discussion. Just because something is put out there for the world to consume, if they so choose.
Not everything is going to be for you, boo.
Right. The whole world doesn't revolve around you. Which, speaking of which, in an odd way, reminds me of an experience I had. You guys, this past Monday, I was at the Lookout. It was the annual post-Folsom Street Fair recovery party at the Lookout.
Okay.
By the way, wall to fucking wall. That joint was packed.
People must have took that Monday off.
What happens is a lot of people
came from out of town
and they don't leave until like Tuesday or whatever, because flights on Tuesday tend to be cheaper than on Monday. And they're just enjoying the day. So it was packed. And I'm talking smoking hot. Man, good God, bitch. I was like moist. My vagine looked like a grilled cheese sandwich.
What happened to all that? Oh, I need to be romanced and all that kind of talk, girl.
Well, girl, I do want to be romanced by one of the hot men, bitch. It's not like I was up in there looking for romance with one of those hot men. Anyway, so it was also extremely warm on Monday. Like, in the 80s. So the bar is on the second floor, which means it gets a little warmer because the heat rises or whatever. So, fortunately, the bar has air conditioning, which in San Francisco is a luxury because a lot of places don't really have it.
Exactly.
So, we have the doors closed or whatever, and it's wall-to-wall in there. It's still very warm, but the air conditioner is going, thank God. So as I'm going around selling Jell-O shots, this one, I asked this two guys who sat down at this table, would you like to buy a Jell-O shot? And the guy's like, no, we wouldn't, but excuse me, can you close this air conditioning vent? It's really cold at this table. This is where I'm going to insert the needle on a record sound. I said, honey, like, if it's too cold at this table, how about you go over in that corner over there where it's smolderingly hot?
Right.
Like, the whole bar is very warm. You happen to be directly under an air conditioning vent for which everyone else in this whole place is actually quite appreciative.
Right.
Bitch, the world doesn't revolve around you.
No.
It's like that mentality, like, well, I don't like this, so instead of fixing it for me, I'm going to ruin it for everybody else.
Right.
Like, girl, like, if you don't want your children to see some non-binary children or character or whatever on Roseanne, the reboot, fucking don't watch. That's why you got a parental advisory lock on your cable and shit.
Yep.
Like, whatever. I don't understand that. Like,
you know, these people who have kids are not sometimes the smart enough people to be having kids in the first place.
Right. Well, I think some of them have kids because they weren't smart enough to use protection. Oh,
well,
damn.
Well, you know.
But I will say this. In fairness to that kind of an argument, though, I also have to say that we on the left also have a tendency to think that people who disagree with us shouldn't speak up or shouldn't whatever, don't have a voice. And I think that becomes really problematic. I don't like them and I will call them out on it, but everybody has their opinion. Like, these bitches, these million women, million moms, go ahead and protest, girl. I don't think the TV company is going to change because they recognize that there's already programming out there for you and they want to make programming for people that maybe are not interested in watching some other shit or who are not served by whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, if we're talking about a reboot of Roseanne, like, Roseanne had lesbian storylines throughout, like, the entire second half of the show. So, and out characters and out actors and actresses on it. So I really think that you're barking up the wrong tree right there.
Yeah, wasn't one of the main characters, didn't she turn out to be lesbian or something?
Well,
like that?
I think that, like, the sister. Like, or the, maybe the sister, I don't remember. One of them did, and Sandra Bernhardt was on the show, who is a bisexual or a lesbian, was on the show playing a straight character for a while. And I mean, it's one of those things where they're very much in that realm. So I don't, you know, it's like complaining that Will and Grace are coming back with two gay leads and, like, you know, girl, that's what it is. It is what it is. And you're fighting an uphill battle here, boo. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of news and protesting, there was a whole NFL protest.
Protest is all over the news.
Yeah.
I'm sure that listeners around the world and across the United States certainly are familiar with the fact that President Donald Trump has started name calling players within the NFL.
I cannot.
Because of the fact that they are in silent protest of police brutality by taking a knee during the national anthem. Sorry. Mm-hmm. So they are dropping to one knee as a form of silent protest. And he is calling for people to boycott the NFL, like, for calling for the NFL to fire these players, all this stuff. Meanwhile, he's doing all of this stuff relating to the NFL as all the entirety, 100% of the country of Puerto Rico, which is a United States province, is without power or fresh running water. And he has not said one word about this. The only thing he said about Puerto Rico is that they're in trouble because they were already in such debt before this happened.
Like, how dare you?
Like, he said in a tweet, Texas and Florida are on their way to being back on their feet, but Puerto Rico's in trouble because they were already in debt.
Girl, the mayor was on TV. The mayor from Puerto Rico was on TV in tears, girl.
Well, I mean, Hillary Clinton has gone out and said that she's not even sure that Donald Trump is aware that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. That's number one. Number two,
Isn't this what his employees are supposed to be there for?
It doesn't matter. You're the president of the United States. You should already know that, number one. And number two, to me, this is, like, if you're questioning, like, if you look at both of these things in relation to a bigger picture, if you're questioning whether or not Donald Trump is racist,
girl, the answer is yes.
You have your answer. An entire country of predominantly brown United States citizens are without power and water, and he has not fucking lifted a finger to help them.
He hasn't taken a breath to help them.
Somebody did a count. He's had 20 tweets about the NFL.
Wow.
And not one tweet about Puerto Rico. Not one. Not a single thing. There's been no effort whatsoever made to help Puerto Rico. My heart goes out. I mean, I don't have a significant number of strong ties to Puerto Rico personally, other than the fact that my drag father, Jose Guzman Colon, is Puerto Rican. He's got a significant number of family who lives there. I'm very good friends with Jessica Wilde and Yara Sofia and Lanesha Sparks, all of whom whose families live there. I mean, my ties to the country are fairly superficial, but we're talking about a portion of the United States, which is so strongly part of the U.S. that there have been debates over the last 25 years of whether we should make it the 51st state. Right. And he's not even helping. Not helping a bit. And that is just disgusting.
Right. This shouldn't have been the drawing point to where you would know he's racist.
No, but I mean, every step along the way really should be. I will tell you, I saw a friend, well, no, not a friend, a woman that I went to high school with.
Not a real friend.
She's in this case, definitely not a real friend, because she's one of the people who I've mentioned on the podcast before that I only accepted her friend request to fucking rub it in her nose that I'm fierce.
Yes.
So anyway, I saw her post something that said to the effect of, so tell me again how the oppressed millionaire is frustrated about not being able to express himself, meaning referencing the NFL player who is being called dirty names or whatever because he took a knee. She's insinuating that, oh, tell me again about this oppressed millionaire. Bitch.
You dumb bitch.
She is a dumb bitch. And the reason she's a dumb bitch is because that oppressed millionaire, as you're talking about, first of all, he is trying to oppress him. It doesn't matter whether he's got $1 million or $2.
Right.
That's number one. The president is trying to remove his freedom of speech, number one. And number two, the fact of the matter is, the reason that it's important for that oppressed millionaire to do shit like this is because he is actually in a position of power gained through his financial status as well as his status within the NFL to make a stand that other people like you or I or everyday common folks
would not matter.
Nobody would fucking pay attention if we did. We could be on our knees day and night and nobody would have paid attention.
Right.
But this has got people talking and it's got people frustrated and it's got other people acting up in accordance. And the other part of her message was it showed all of these caskets from like people who were lost in war, like, you know, military people lost in war, draped in flags. And she said, would that oppressed millionaire tell us which of these people are black so we can remove the offensive flag? You dumb fucking cunt. It's not about that at all. It's about the fact, it's not about the flag being offensive. It's about the fact that that flag stands for far more than a flag. If you think this is about a flag, you should stick that flag in your cunt and fucking go somewhere because you're stupid. What the flag represents are the liberties of our nation and what the Constitution stands for, which means that people should be treated equally, that all of us should be safe under our Constitution and under the protection of our legal system.
Right.
This being about police brutality against people of color clearly doesn't stand for that.
Right.
And guess what that flag also stands for? It stands for the right to protest peacefully. And I cannot think of a more peaceful form of protest than simply
just
dropping to one knee during a national anthem. That is silent, it is harmless, and it is absolutely within the rights of our Constitution for anyone who wants to do that to do so. There is no law that says you have to stand and fucking cover your heart and sing along and be patriotic. First of all, this is a country that if you don't want to fucking be patriotic,
you don't have to be.
And more than anything else, right now it's really hard to feel like much of a patriot because we've got a fucking douchebag.
Right, who's supposed to be our representative. Grow up now.
Going around the world trying to fucking, cause wars and then cover up for the stupidity he's doing outside by creating some drama inside.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it was just passed that his government, Trump's government, will now begin monitoring the social media of all immigrant people. whether they are legal or illegal within the United States, they can legally monitor anyone's social media if they are an immigrant. Bitch, this is some fucking 1984 Orson Welles, Big Brother is in your business bullshit, you guys.
Wow.
Things are fucked.
Yeah. I mean, things have been a mess, you know. But, I mean, it's just not getting no better.
It is really bad. And I know that people, I really do believe that something needs to give. Something needs to give. I will say, I'm 44 years old. I have lived through the Reagan era. That's 8 years of Reagan. I lived through 8 years of a Bush. I lived through 4 years of another Bush. So we're talking almost half of my life that has been spent under various Republicans as our president of the United States. I don't know if it's because of the fact that I was not culturally aware enough, old enough, or what, to be in a position where I see things the way I do now. But with the exception of Reagan completely denying, basically, the AIDS crisis, which was in front of him, and costing millions of lives within our country of people within the LGBTQ community and beyond because of his denial about that epidemic, I've never seen a person who's been in our ultimate position within this country who I legitimately cannot stand on any level.
Right.
Even in the face of all of that he was doing politically that was pretty wretched, President Reagan was a fairly likable personality, and he was educated, at least on political and political affairs. He was educated on international affairs. He was well spoken. All of these things, none of which could be used to describe Donald Trump. And I am just aghast. I've never been. This is the first growing time that I've been embarrassed to be an American. I mean, I've thought it periodically in the past when our vice president, Dan Quayle, misspelled potato. I was embarrassed about that. But, this is a situation of ongoing humiliation. And it's just getting worse. And when I actually find some humor and truth in somebody like Kim Jong-il, the president of North Korea, calling him, I'm trying to remember what he called him. He made up a word for Donald Trump. And it was like a dong something or a dobot or it was, what the fuck was it? Kim Jong.
You know, I'm sure there's plenty of nicknames that man has at this point.
Donald Trump called Kim Jong-un a rocket man. And then, he called Donald Trump a dotard.
A dotard.
I don't know what the fuck that is, but I think that it is so appropriate for whatever it brings to mind. It really seems appropriate for Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a fucking dotard.
Oh, Donald Trump. He just made... Ah, his name just gives me anxiety at this point,
Well, I can say that as a whole, since Donald Trump began campaigning and seemed to be, apparent that he was going to be the nominee for the president, I have been having anxiety about, every day. Every day has caused me anxiety since then. And since his election, the anxiety has amplified. It's just the worst. So.
Girl, that's rough. It's been rough. And it's going to continue to be rough unless something happens. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the bright side is he'll probably get us all blown up soon enough, so.
Right.
It'll end all of our anxiety. I mean, that's one way to do it. We all accidentally get blown up by some fucking foreign country being, really livid about him. You know, the only one piece of good news that has come out of this is that Omarosa, that stupid bitch from The Apprentice, who was, so supportive of him and everything. Well, apparently, this came out a few weeks ago, so it's old news, but I just found it so damn amusing that I have to mention it here. So she is allegedly part of, his council or whatever. You know what I mean? So he names her as part of his council. He promised her some role in a council or whatever, so she'd be, really outspoken for him. But apparently, she was highly irritating to all the people in the office of, actual people in the office. Right. You know that Trump basically is a nightmare for everyone who works for him. That's become apparent. That's why people go in and leave a week later. That's why there's constant turnover. Nobody wants to deal with the stress of this situation. And whether they, like, go in for a little bit and then leave or whatever, even the people who are staying on probably are just at their wit's end on a daily basis.
Completely.
So, at any rate, that has been exacerbated by such things as Donald Trump sending his daughter Ivanka to major events to sub in for him. The bitch can't even run a clothing line, and he's got her, like, standing in for the fucking president of the United States, right? Well, wow. Omarosa was also popping up at random because she had clearance for this shit. Well, this gagged me. Allegedly, she got so annoying popping up unexpectedly at shit that they put her on a no-fly list.
No way.
Yes, they put her on a no-fly list so she couldn't just randomly fucking pop up somewhere and be there.
I didn't know. Oh, my God.
I read it. They put Omarosa on a fucking no-fly list. This isn't meaning, like, she's a terrorist or whatever, but it probably means that...
It means she's terrorizing somebody's life.
Yeah, exactly. It means that she's probably... They make life difficult for the bitch. And I just was gagged. I was
can't believe it.
Serves you right, you bitch.
Right.
Serves you right.
Oh, my gosh.
They were like, listen...
That's karma for that ass.
Exactly. They're like, look, this fuck nugget gave her clearance to this shit, but we got to do something. This bitch is really fucking giving us grief. If we can't vote her ass off the island or whatever, we're just going to make sure her ass can't get to the island.
Right.
You know what, Omarosa? You've won an all-expenses trip to paid trip to Salt Lake City, Utah.
Right.
And then they send her off there, like, go over there and speak to those Utahians about what the fuck is going on with the presidency. And then she gets there and they're like, by the way, bitch, you better take an Amtrak back because you can't get on the train. Hey, you're stranded. So fucked up.
I love it. I hope that's what happened.
I hope so, too. Anyway.
She's just, you know... She's one of those people that's just like him, is just an evil bitch.
Well, very self-serving. That's what it's obvious. I saw this interview that she did. It was like a talk show or something. And the guy was asking her actual questions and she got real cunty about it. And he was like, well, I'm not trying to be confrontational. And basically she only wanted to talk about what she wanted to talk about. And the guy's like, that's not really how this works. Yeah. And then, so she got up and left and he was like, see ya, bitch.
I heard that.
Like, I mean, it's very much a Donald Trump mentality. Like, right. No, you're not allowed to ask me anything. And I'm going to try to make you feel stupid for wanting to ask something that that's not on my agenda.
Girl, that's not how it works.
It's not how it works. It is not how it works. All right, you guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to have with us... He is a brand new producer on the music scene. He's got all kinds of remixes out of our favorite artists. And now he's releasing music all on his own while getting ready to embark upon his first headlining North American tour. We're going to have music producer and hitmaker Griffin on with us right after this. You're listening to Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
To stay abreast of all the latest events happening in the LGBTQ world down under, visit Australia's favorite website, GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com combines celebrity interviews, news, and LGBTQ-related travel and pride-related updates from around the world. That's GuideToGay.com, Australia's premier website for all things relating to the LGBTQ world. GuideToGay.com is a proud media sponsor of Party Foul Radio. Welcome back to Party Foul Radio. My name is Poyet Omar. I am your co-host and producer of this show, and we're excited at this time to have with us our next musical guest. His remixes and original music have reached millions via YouTube, and he has worked with everyone from Tove Lo, for whom he did an amazing remix of her hit single, Talking Body. He's worked with Snake Hips, Mo, and though he is heterosexual, he has... worked with incredible out artists like Troye Sivan and Ollie Alexander of the band Years and Years. He has a brand new single out with Sinead Harnett called Love in Ruins. He is originally from the Bay Area, now living in Los Angeles, and is ready to embark on his Castles in the Sky national headlining tour. Please welcome to Party Foul Radio at this time, music producer and musician Griffin. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing, Griffin?
I'm doing well, thanks.
When I was listening to your music, I had no idea initially that you got your start sort of in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where I'm located. I guess you grew up here.
Yeah, well, I'm from the South Bay. Like, I grew up right near Palo Alto.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, San Francisco is kind of like, I sort of identify it kind of like as my hometown, like, city, so.
Right, it's a very...
That's awesome, man. How long have you, are you from San Francisco, or you just live there now?
Well, I've lived here for almost 20 years. I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else, so it's definitely my hometown. You know how it is, like, the Bay Area also, like, seeps into you, and it makes you the person you are.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's awesome, man. It's a great place to be, that's for sure.
First of all, I want you to tell me about the new single, because I really, really enjoy Love in Ruins. I like it a lot. So I wanted you to tell me a little bit about the genesis of that.
Yeah, I mean, funny is the song had actually been done for quarantine. Like, I had done it around, like, the era that I put out Heading Home. I've been really a fan of Sinead Hartnett for a while. Like, I first heard her on, like, a Disclosure record several years back, and I thought her voice was just so good. And I've always wanted to work with her, and she sent over a few demos, like, a year and a half ago, maybe, and one of them was that. And, yeah, I just sort of, like, really resonated with the vibe of it and kind of started, like, messing around with the electric guitar and trying to come up with some cool riffs. And that's, like, ultimately what kind of, like, shaped the record. And then for various reasons, like, I had other singles I was working on pushing, and she kind of had her own artist project that the EP that she was working on, so we couldn't put it out for a while, but... Then I kind of circled back to her and was like, hey, I really still love this song. I would love to put it out. And she was like, yeah, it works for me. Like, I still really like it too. And then we put it out. So it's kind of like how it all came together. But yeah, I'm really proud of that song. It's definitely one of my favorites too. So I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, it's interesting when you tell that story, it kind of brings to light something that I think that we recognize in terms of the kind of evergreen quality of a good song. Like, there's even years after something is done, it has that ability to still touch us or whatever. And this is a song that sort of sat with you guys for a while, but the quality of it was so good that you really wanted to put it out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny with music, because sometimes it takes forever for a song to come out for so many reasons, like the label, the other artists you're working with, your own project. Like, things get delayed so often, but you sort of even emphasizes more that it's really about, like, wanting to make quality records that have that last, because you also never know when it's going to come out. And trends in music change so much, but if you fundamentally have, like, a good record, it's gonna last and resonate with people no matter what time or whenever you put it out.
I was going to ask you, because being a U.S.-based and American-born music producer, so many of the acts that you work with are from outside the United States. And I was wondering what your draw is towards international vocalists like Sinead or like Bipolar Sunshine. And
yeah, I mean, I guess, like, man, that's actually a really good question. I think maybe I'm just, like, sort of inspired because they're like, I guess they just bring something a little bit different and unique to the table that I'm not, but that I haven't, like, had to really work with before or been used to growing up. I don't even know, actually, but there's certainly, like, a different vibe that they bring to the table. Each of them is, like, different, and even, like, their recording process, like Joseph Salva or Fadeo or Bipolar Sunshine, like, they didn't want, like, auto feel like their sort of styles and little differences is what are what makes some of the records special and have like a different quality to them. So I think maybe I just admire like working with different cultures and backgrounds. They bring something unique and different to the table that I might not necessarily bring on my own.
Yeah, I mean, I look at your resume and it's almost exclusively, whether it's from your early remix work for Tove Lo or your stuff with Sinead and, I mean, even Joseph Salat.
Yeah, that's
like,
so funny, actually. I never even realized that myself.
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, I haven't become aware of one track of yours pretty much that's based with a U.S., you know, born vocalist, so.
That's hilarious, and because a lot of the upcoming stuff, well, I guess so the next single is an American-based person, but a couple of the other songs I'm working on, too, are also international artists, so, well, wow, that's a good observation.
I shouldn't have even said that because, you know, Daya is born in the United States and you guys had a huge hit together, and so that, I guess that I disproved my own theory by recognizing that before somebody else called
me. I think you're right there. Like, I'm working with a lot of people, particularly in the UK. Yeah, I guess there just is something that stands out to me from them artistically that makes me want to work with them. I think maybe it is because they're from different cultures and backgrounds, and I just kind of find like the difference inspiring.
Right. I mean, one of the things that I was told about you, and I don't know from firsthand exposure, but speaking of like embracing other cultures and certainly being based initially in the Bay Area would expose you to a lot of that. I was wondering if you could talk about the influence of the LGBTQ community on your work or the acceptance of your work by our community.
Yeah, no, I definitely think you hit the nail on the head in terms of like my background being from the Bay Area. Like, not only is it like culturally very diverse and I was exposed to that, but like, yeah, I mean, it just being a great place to grow up for me because people from all different countries kind of come here for work and live there, and well, socially it's very diverse too, so I've always been kind of like open and accepting to all that kind of stuff, and that's a part of why I'm like so grateful for your community that's accepted me. I've made a lot of music, actually, that features artists that are, like, publicly gay, like Troye Sivan and Ollie Alexander from Years and Years, and I feel like that working with them has been an awesome experience for me, and it's really kind of, like, opened the door for my music to be heard by the community, so I'm, like, just very grateful for it and very accepting of the community. I'm just happy that, you know, they enjoy my music.
Troye Sivan is, I think that in terms of out artists, there's a lot of people who are coming out as musicians lately, but Troye is so unabashed about it. He reminds me, we just did an interview with Superfruit from Pentatonix, and it's kind of the same thing. It's just very unapologetic and very in your face in a non-confrontational way. It's just like, well, this is who I am, so either you're going to like it or you're not. I really relate to that.
Feel like it gives, like, first off, he's being true to himself and, like, his own artistic and personal integrity, which is, like, huge. And I think he's giving, you know, people within the community sort of, like, confidence as well to be, like, you know, this is who I am, and that's the beautiful thing, you know. So I'm all about Troye doing that, and I feel like Ollie does that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible for me to imagine somebody who's basically their entire career is built around convincingly conveying emotions through music would even try to do that if they are not able to be honest with who they are. You know what I mean? It's like, it's impossible.
Yeah, 100%.
So your approach to electronic in production is a little bit different than a lot of what we hear, even from some of the people that you list as your inspirations, like Avicii and whatnot. you use a lot of live instrumentation, specifically guitars and pianos in your music, because you, from what I read, you said you wanted to have that kind of like organic feel. And I think that as a listener, that really resonates, because electronica is great and wonderful and it's one of my favorite musical forms, but sometimes it just doesn't feel real, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, definitely, 100%. And yeah, I think that's sort of why, definitely always been my goal to the music, is sometimes, like, you can draw in, like, a piano note on the computer, for sure, and it still sounds good, but there's something, like, I don't know, that's like a deeper connection. Maybe it'll get proven scientifically someday, but I just feel like that a human, like, can really, like, react and have a different emotional connection to, like, a real organic, like, analog recording. It just has some, like, different quality to it that enables, like, the person to get more connected to the music. So that's how I've always felt, and that's why I've kind of made it really, like, record the instrumentation into the track and give it, like, that real human touch that you might not be able to, like, quantify, but there's a difference to it that you can, like, feel.
Well, I went to see Clean Bandit in concert a few months ago.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, when I think of them, I think of them as this electronic band. But when I got there, almost everything is live instrumentation with a keyboardist.
Yeah, a bunch of people.
It was incredible. It changed the dynamics of a performance because of the fact that there's actually something happening. You know what I mean? Like, people.
Right.
So I can 100% believe that you would feel that there would be a different vibe to your music if there's live instrumentation in it.
Yeah, definitely.
Tell me about what the experience was like for you performing at Coachella. Coachella is such a huge thing, and you got to be there for two nights.
Yeah, that was definitely a career life achievement highlight type situation. I mean, being from California, Northern California, but then I went to school in LA. Like, Coachella is always kind of like, has always been a festival that I've always attended as a fan of music. And once I started actually, like, taking on this project as like a career, it's been like the festival that I've always circled and wanted to be a part of. So to finally be able to do that and play the stage and make a big, like, performance out of it, like, it was definitely one of the highlights of my career, if not the highlight up to this point. So it was just, like, an amazing thing. I still get, like, goosebumps when I look at photos and video footage of that show. I just can't even believe it actually happened. I've been dreaming of playing Coachella for so long. So it was a huge moment for me, for sure.
And you're going to be playing at Lollapalooza, too, which is crazy.
Yeah, I did Lollapalooza. It was in August. And that's another, like, one. It's one of those, like, A-tier festivals that you just, as an artist, you dream to be invited to. And, yeah, that was absolutely incredible. And I love the city of Chicago. It's such a great place. So, yeah, that was really high up as well. I'm very fortunate that I got to play some of those big festivals this summer.
So now tell us about what it's like to be embarking on another headlining tour.
It's very exciting. It's definitely my most ambitious tour. I think 30-some cities, 35, 37 cities or something like that. And the biggest tour I've done before was maybe like 15 or something like that. So it's like over twice as long. It's my first time doing a tour bus. I'll be like living on a bus for 50-some days. It's going to be a totally new experience for me, and I'm going to be going to so many cities I've never been to before, so I can't wait to, like, experience the new cities and meet the fans there. And, yeah, it's just, I've been putting a lot of effort in on the music front and what the show is going to look like and become, so it's just been, I'm excited to get on the road and really looking forward to it.
And you get to come home, like, basically, you get to come home and play here in San Francisco at the Warfield, so.
I know, and my parents and my sister are still I love playing in San Francisco, and I'm really looking forward to this show in particular.
Other journalists have described your music as being electronic, but infused with indie, like indie pop. And to me, that doesn't make a great deal of sense necessarily, or doesn't immediately ring a bell for me what that means. And I was wondering what it means to you to hear that description.
Yeah, I mean, growing up and listening to music, what like really has inspired me is like a fusion of a lot of different genres. I don't like only listen to one type. I don't like only listen to dance music and don't listen to anything else. But I think like I do like a lot of rock music. Like I was really into rock and punk pop and all that kind of stuff when I was younger. And I listened to like pop music on the radio all the time and everything. So I've been exposed to like a lot of different genres, I guess. What I'm trying to say. So I try and like kind of bring like elements and vibes from different genres all kind of together and meld it into like the dance productions and stuff. But I guess from the indie vibes, I mean, a lot of the acts like I tend to remix kind of come from most of them come from non-dance worlds and are kind of more in the indie pop lane. So I guess maybe that's where that distinction comes from. But a lot of that music has, I always love like the feelings of those kinds of records and the production techniques that they use for those records that make them different from like a dance record, for instance. And so I guess I try and bring some of those production elements into my music, which is maybe what gives people that sort of feeling of kind of like dance mixed with indie at the same time.
Yeah, one of the things I will say that I have loved about recent evolutions in dance music or electronic music is that blending, the fusion, if you will, of a variety of influences. You actually are hearing much more often some of the things that you're talking about, the influence of indie pop stars being featured on dance records, or people who would not necessarily be considered a dance artist making those records, and you get to hear the different influences musically in the tracks that are being released, I think more so than perhaps in the past where everything was strictly intended for dance music or written and visualized as dance music from the beginning.
Yep. Yeah, totally. It's totally right. I mean, I feel like more than ever there's been a melding of genres. And there isn't, as clear distinctions of, like, okay, this is rock music, this is how it needs to be made, and this is how it needs to sound. And then you have pop music and then dance music. Like, they're all kind of, like, fusing together and drawing inspiration from each other. So it's a pretty exciting time. Like, people aren't really afraid to collaborate outside of maybe their comfort zone or their genre specifically, and are just trying to make good music. And that's really what it's about fundamentally. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think that, I for example, I know that you've done remix work with Maroon 5 in the past, and the new Maroon 5 track, to me, kind of almost doesn't sound like a Maroon 5 song. You know, it's so poppy and so dancey that it's somewhere across the line. And I think that that's happening more and more often where artists are defying genres, where before, if an artist crossed genres, people thought it was so miraculous or strange or unusual. And now it's kind of almost common fare. I really appreciate you talking to us today. I appreciate you talking to me, and I'm excited. I love it when somebody from the Bay Area, you know, goes out and does big things. I think that we are such a creative hotbed, and I think sometimes we're overlooked in that. We're seen as like the hippy dippies, but we also a really creative bunch up here. So smart people. And I'm glad that you're doing well. Yeah, absolutely. I would love that. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
All right.
Yeah, so if you want to just message Austin or something, we can definitely get you on the list and hook you up for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. And best of luck.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too. Bye. All right, everybody. That was the multi-talented music producer, Griffin, based in Los Angeles now. He's originally from the Bay Area, and he has a wide array of both original music and remixes of your favorite tracks. Go check him out. That's G-R-Y-F-F-I-N, Griffin on YouTube. And certainly check out his new single, Love in Ruins, with British singer Sinead Harnett. The remix package is available now. Check it out on Spotify or iTunes. We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this. Left Magazine is Northern California's most beautiful LGBTQ news, entertainment, and lifestyles publication. For all the latest events happening in Northern California's queer nightlife scene, pick up your copy of Left Magazine today in the Castro. That's Left Magazine. Pick up your copy today or visit them online at liveleft.com. That's an easy URL, you guys. Go visit liveleft.com to find out what's happening in San Francisco and beyond. All right, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. We just heard from Griffin. He is a music producer. Go check him out. His new single, Love in Ruins, is amazing. I love it. Sinead Harnett, who's a British singer, sounds incredible on it. It's a great duo. Go watch their video and listen to them on YouTube now. And the remix package is available right now. So go check that out as well. All right. We are about to go next to our interview with Miss Patricia Arquette, everyone.
Hello, Patricia Arquette.
Again, Patricia Arquette won an Oscar award for her 2015 role in the film Boyhood, which was actually recorded over 12 real-life years. So you got to see each of the actors.
Did you see the movie?
I have not seen it. Did you see it?
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's a great movie.
I haven't seen it, but I do know that she swept every single award that year for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
So clearly, it was something worthwhile for her. Pearl loves it. And many people know her for her role for a number of years on television as the Medium. On television, on TV show Medium.
Yeah, but this is such a bigger role for her.
Oh, like, yeah, well, so it's clearly it was a career-defining role for her.
Yeah.
And as we will talk about extensively, her sister, Alexis Arquette, transitioned very publicly in the public eye. We've talked about her in not-so-glowing terms on the past episodes sometimes, Pearl. Like, I mean, I think that...
We are you.
Both of us. But we did. We, whoa. Like, because... We have, you guys. Pearl's trying to push it off on me.
I don't think it was me, girl.
I definitely think that, as you will find out in the interview with Patricia, Alexis was a very complex and complicated person. And I think that even Patricia in the interview addresses the fact that sometimes, even for the people who loved her the most and knew her the best, she was probably infuriating. You know what I mean? Like, as a person... And this is one of the most powerful interviews I've ever done.
Patricia, like somebody I know.
Patricia, shut up. Patricia, by the way, I cannot express my gratitude enough for her, because the way this interview came about, it's very important that I share this, just because of, I think it really speaks to the kind of individual that Patricia Arquette is. She shared initially one of my stories on the Huffington Post. And I saw her name listed as a person who shared it. And I was like, there's no way that the Patricia Arquette. And I looked, and sure enough, it was the Patricia Arquette who shared my story. It was our interview with Anthony Bowens about being a bisexual professional wrestler. So then I tweeted her, said, hey, did you read my article? And if so, would you be interested in an interview? Well, she immediately followed me. I followed her back, and through private message, she gave me her manager's number and said, just call this person. She'll set it up. And I did. And her team was so amazing. It took me a few weeks to get in touch with them. But by the time I did and we spoke on the phone, the interview happened like within days. She's just that involved. She'll tell you in the interview that...
Go check out the interview.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take you now to our interview with... This is first half of two. Next week, she will be back for episode 86 to finish this epic interview, which is highly emotional, extremely thought-provoking. Without further ado, let's take you now to our interview with Patricia Arquette, everyone. Welcome back to Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Poyo Del Mar, and I'm excited to introduce our next guest at this time. She is an Academy Award-winning actress... having played single mother Olivia Evans in the 2015 Oscar-nominated Boyhood, for which she took home the Best Supporting Actor statuette. She also took home an AFTRA SAG Award and universally swept the Best Supporting Actress category that year. Of course, Patricia Arquette was already very well known to fans of both film and television before her role in Boyhood. For a number of years, she played the lead character on television's Medium, winning the Best Lead Actress Award for that, and has appeared in films for Martin Scorsese, as well as David Lynch. In addition to her professional work, Patricia is an outspoken advocate for a variety of causes, not the least of which are concerns to the LGBTQ community. Patricia is, of course, part of Hollywood's very well-established Arquette family, including brother David, sister Rosanna, and late sister Alexis Arquette. Patricia's sister Alexis amassed more than 70 credits during the course of her career and transitioned quite publicly as she embraced her gender identity with the support of her family later in life. Alexis, of course, unfortunately passed away in 2016 from complications relating to HIV and AIDS. It's a pleasure at this time to have on with us Oscar-winning actress, advocate, and ally for the LGBTQ community, Miss Patricia Arquette, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning, Ned.
How are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited to speak with you this morning. Thank you for taking time to talk to me. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thanks for your great articles you've been writing.
Aw, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, as a journalist, you don't think, I'm sure it's not unlike when you're acting, you just don't think about what the audience's response will be. You just do your best and put it out into the world and see how it's received.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing with the event of social media and social sharing and following people who are interested in similar subject matter and social justice causes. I think it's changed the power of news and media in a good way, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and the individual, I think. You know, we often think to ourselves like, oh, I'm just one person. I'm not a celebrity or whatever. I can't make a difference. But really, by disseminating information and by sharing ideas, I think that everybody has the opportunity to impact, even if it's just another or a handful of others, to bring awareness to causes that are important to them.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, people like you who really dig into a subject and do a deep dive, and it's not just little anecdotal things, and you go much deeper looking at the impact of multiple things, I think is really helpful also.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I was shocked when I discovered that you had read one of my articles. But then when I started to follow and watch what your Twitter feed specifically is, it's almost entirely political. Your social media is almost entirely political in many senses, in ways that I don't think other people who are your peers are in terms of their social media. And I was wondering kind of what guides that.
Well, I think the movie business has changed a lot. And at this point, we're really at the time where, when I started out, there would be a movie company. It wasn't owned by also a company that made TV sets and everything else. Now these companies are like giant worldwide conglomerations. So I think people are afraid to be political. But that's kind of a decision that I made, because to me, we're in a really critical time, and ethically, I don't feel correct about not speaking up and being political in this time. But I think, you know, we had a lot of activists, you know, artists like Jane Fonda, and a lot of actors that were very political, and now it's kind of not as popular. Like, you could basically name the really political actors on your hand who are willing to be locally political activists.
You stated that, for example, after accepting the Oscar award in 2015, that
you felt your outspoken advocacy for equal pay for women cost you roles. Is there a time that you begin to think that perhaps you've gone too far in terms of speaking out in support of the subjects that are important to you?
Well, I've definitely gotten that feedback from some people, but I don't care. It's like, I've had a great career and I'm very grateful for it, but I'm not going to not be a human being. I'm not going to not notice what's happening with my brothers and sisters all over the place. I can't ignore that. And I've definitely seen myself at odds in some situations because of that, but I'm all right with that decision. And I'm also in a really privileged position to be able to even say that. I've been successful for a long time, and I think it's going to get worse. It's only going to get worse that artists will be less and less verbal because there will be ramifications, even if they're unspoken. It will happen. So we're like, unless things change radically, I think we're at the tail end of real free social expression, and I want to experience it and be a part of it as long as it's possible.
Yeah, you mentioned the idea that there was an era when actors, many of whom were quite political in their speech, the first person I thought of was Jane Fonda, of course, and
yeah.
She took so much flack in the 70s for her outspoken stance against Vietnam War, and then quite fortunately everything in the entertainment industry seems to be a little bit cyclical, so you can be persona non grata for a few years and then ultimately talent wins out again and you get to go back to doing what you were doing.
Right, yeah. I think that's true too, and definitely she did pay a really heavy price for that. There's no doubt about it. But also, this is our world, and I don't know, as artists, it's our job to, like, play human beings, and I don't know how you can really do that or have real empathy for your fellow man if you're not aware of what's going on with people.
Now, one of the causes that seems to be of specific interest to you is as relates to the LGBTQ community, and of course, we're well aware of the relationship with your sister, Alexis, and all that transpired publicly with her. But I was curious if your connection to the community pre-existed that.
Well, no. I mean, I really think that Alexis's personal journey of finding herself exposed our whole family to the LGBTQ experience as family members. You know, I remember when Alexis was little and dressing up as a girl and lining up in the girls' line and getting in trouble at school for that, and her not even understanding exactly why she was doing that. And then coming out as gay and you know, dealing with the ramifications of that and the fears of that, my mother's fears that she would get hurt in the world, and then the beginning of AIDS and the fear of that. And so I think a lot of it, my observation of it and my personal interest started early on because of Alexis. And really my acute awareness that there was a different America, different set of rules, and a substandard set of, a substandard justice system set up for LGBTQ people. You know, I was constantly worried about Alexis in this world. And how she would be treated in the world, because it just, so I think without Alexis' journey, I don't know that I would be as aware as I am. I'm sure I would still have empathy, but I don't know that I would really have watched, I want to say thousands and thousands of her experiences of discrimination throughout her life.
Yeah, I mean, in asking that question, I came in with the awareness that it's very difficult to even imagine what your exposure would have been without having a sibling so close in age who was in the public spotlight as part of the community for many, many years. And the majority of her public life, to be honest, and that would have to undoubtedly, I mean, I think of my own family and certainly my experience colors theirs and their exposure and awareness. So it's something that I knew in advance was probable, but I was just always curious about that.
But you also, you know, it's a different thing when it's somebody you love and they're experiencing discrimination in real time in the world. It's, you know, it's one thing when you read about a political agenda, but when you're hearing about, like, someone being discriminated against by a nurse or a doctor or, you know, trying to get a cup of coffee. All of these little whittling away, dehumanizing experiences that you see your loved one go through, I think also really educates you to the mass of how it is to be LGBT. In America, or how it has been, and I hope that that's changing. And I think it is changing a lot for the better, but also every time you turn around, there's some new governmental push to take away basic human civil rights from the LGBTQ community and silence them, and it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And the other element of even knowing that your relationship with her had to have colored your own experience is based on decision-making of your own and your family's, because you made the decision to be supportive of a family member that you loved. And it's an unfortunate reality that even with having an LGBTQ child or transgender child or family member, friend, that the decision to be supportive of that and to be understanding, compassionate, and educate yourself so that you can better interact and support that individual is 100% choice. And so many people don't make that choice.
I know, it's horrifying. I mean, it kills me when I hear how many people turn away from their families turn away from them when they come out, when they just start living their truth. Alexis has been one of the greatest gifts of my whole life, you know? Alexis has been my great friend, my sibling, my teacher, and also my hero and heroine in so many ways. but I'll tell you what, had our family turned away, we would be the ones missing out, for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
for sure. But I hate that kids have to go through that, that people have to go through that all the time.
I will tell you, Patricia, that my that thing that you mentioned a few moments ago, where you said that your mother's had great concern for how your sister would be treated in the world. When I came out to my mom, it's so devastating that the experience of coming out can be so devastating, just because up until that moment that you speak your truth, there's always the fear that these people that are so influential to you, that you love more than anything, your family, your mother, your father, whomever, will reject you. You know, that's inherent. No matter, even if you know better, it's still there because the possibility exists. But when I came out to my mother, I remember so distinctly, she said to me, "I need you to know that I accept you and I love you. My greatest fear is that I know that there are people in this world who won't. And that is my fear for you. My fear for you is how others will treat you." And that has always stayed with me. You know, that wrenching thought that a mother must have, that because a parent wants to send their child into the world safe and feel good about, you know, the life that's ahead for them. And it always stuck with me that, because of my identity, my mom had to burden some of that fear, you know?
Yeah, well, it's definitely this, the stupid people of society's fault, but it is a reality. I mean, it's a reality, and, you know, I remember going out with Alexis, you know, and her being dressed in her feminine, you know, way, and people flipping out about it, and threatening to kick her ass, and me thinking, like, oh my God, this is so scary, and this happens to her all the time, you know, and she experienced violence at the hands of strangers, and it is a terrifying thing for someone you love. I mean, I grew up in a time where there was a bunch of punk rockers. And, you know, there was a whole division of them that were anti-LGBTQ. It was just a crazy time to, you know. And I think it's still a crazy time. There's still so much homophobia. There's still so much bigotry around it. And, yeah, it is terrifying, I think, when you have a loved one and you have to kind of realize the world is such a stupid place and such a dangerous place. I was actually talking to Philando Castile's mom, and she was talking about the terror she had every day her black son went out in the world.
Yeah. I really believe that that's 100% a reality for so many people. So I wish that people could understand that. I've always said that, you know, circumstances can be radically different in the lives of people, whether it's socioeconomic or gender identity or sexual identity, but emotions are the same. Love is the same. Fear is the same. You know, desperation is the same. And those are the human factors that tie us together. Whereas finances can certainly separate us. Wealth and opportunity can separate us, but the basic core emotions are human, and that's what is everyone has. Whether you're rich or poor, or black or white, or gay or straight.
Well, I think the problem is how many people forget that. You know, they don't see other people as their human brothers and sisters. And, it's disheartening for sure. But I think that there's so many kids that have their families turn away from them, and that is... I don't understand it at all, and it's a horrible thing, and also, to me, proof of their parents' limitation to be able to love anybody else at all, really.
Oh, yeah, I believe that, too. Now, I'm going to share a more lighthearted experience that I had. I met your sister several times, and in various club environment situations, and in passing, we had mutual friends. And the very first time I ever met her, I was in Los Angeles. This is many, many years ago. I couldn't tell you the date, but she was performing at a club down there, and she stage dived off the stage into the crowd, and I was hit in the face by her penis. And,
oh my God!
And afterwards, we were outside as the place was kind of closing down, and she was like, yeah, I'm really sorry my dick hit you in the face. And, you know, it was at least she was very apologetic about it. I thought that was quite pleasant. You know, I was like, maybe just...
Oh my God.
Maybe just wear underwear, Alexis. That's what I told her.
Is that too much to ask? Oh my God. She's so funny. I can't tell you how many people, after she died, told me, I know your sister in LA. And how many people told me that she would drag them away from, like, people she knew were bad people? People, like, on drugs or things like that, selling drugs and whatever. She would just grab these young people, like, no, kid, get away from them. You want to stay away from him? She really hated drugs. This friend of mine told me that she was like, you got to get sober, and he wouldn't. And he came over and he was high on heroin, and she knocked him out, made him get in the car and drove him to rehab.
Wow. Well, I will tell you, I was definitely one of those people who was like pretty strung out when we met the first time. And, And I now have over 13 years sobriety, so, you know, I understand that idea. Like, it was a wild time, those late 90s, early 2000s. So.
I know, and you know what? I'm so glad that I got to be young in that time, because it was actually a really fun time.
Oh, my God, yeah, absolutely.
The best.
Absolutely.
So,
I know that one of the things I've always thought was interesting about the trajectory of your career, of course, we enjoyed you immensely on Medium, on television, and then you won the Academy Award, but within a year of winning that, you were back on television, and that is a move that many actors might not have made, and I was curious why that was.
Let's see, why was that? Well, I like that material. I've always really been driven by material. I've only had a personal publicist for 6 months of my career.
Wow. Okay.
Because I wasn't really plotting a career. Like, it was never my agenda to be the world's biggest star or, you know, that just wasn't my thing. I really wanted to be... make my choices according to the material and the other people I was working with. So it just seemed natural to me to go to the material and not necessarily care, because the reality is TV has changed so drastically. You know, a project like Boardwalk Empire is like a movie series. Or if you look at Game of Thrones or you look at all these different great shows, they're as good as any movie you could find. So, I definitely just wanted to continue to be driven by material. But also, I'd already made a deal before. Before, I think. Haven't I? I think so. But I like the idea of, like, well, look, we're looking now at this election. And we're looking at the impacts of, oh, Russia did this with social media. And, you know, people are just starting to kind of come to terms with the fact that actual voting machines are hackable. So, to me, when I was looking at CSI, cyber, I realized this is an incredibly dangerous thing. We've opened up Genie's box.
Yeah.
And everything has come out of it. And people aren't even aware of what... All of this is capable of. You think that app is doing this, but it can also be used for this.
Absolutely true. I mean, we're seeing that. I mean, people in we as a society entrust every information that we would never give a human to to our phone.
I know.
And we look at things like the Equifax leak, for example. Like, you're supposed to be protecting me, but you've given my information to every hacker.
Give all my information to you. Yeah, exactly. It's really a Wild West time, and I definitely recognized how dangerous this technology is. All of these things that people think are just, you know, safe and mediocre and for fun and for entertainment, I mean... that they have the capacity to even examine your phone to see if you turned right or left or moved forward or backwards. I mean, they could really break down crime scenes according to the apps that you have. You know, if you have those movement apps going on or in your phone, it could say, no. At that point, dude, you walk forward 2 paces. You walk backwards.
Right.
You pulled out a weapon and you turned around, you know?
I remember there was a time when the concept of Big Brother as presented in 1984 was so extraordinarily off-putting, and it seemed so far out and so far-fetched. And now, legitimately, I mean, I'm obsessed with Forensic Files. I will make no joke about that. And almost every single one of the newer episodes of that involves somebody being proven as a liar because... their cell phone tower based off, you know, they bounced off of XYZ cell phone tower, and
right,
they know that they were actually here. Or they will do things like the police will sweep an area and take footage from all of the street lights that are taking photos, or ATMs that are taking photos or all of these things. Yeah. It's like, if somebody wanted to, and there was a purpose or a reason, we are being monitored at all times. Somebody's listening in on our conversation right now. And
absolutely. And there's also like these boxes that are by the side of the road that seem like, oh, those must be for streetlights. Well, your cars have Wi-Fi signals in them. So as you go by, it's also tracking where your car is. So even if you left your cell phone at home, and you said, oh, okay, I parked in the driveway, I watched TV all night. Oh, really? Because your car pinged all of these other things with your car's Wi-Fi. So somebody was driving your car around, and here's where it went. I mean, we are being observed all the time. We are in 1984. It has happened. So to me, that part of that project felt like a public service announcement. It felt timely, and it felt important, and I think it is, to me, incredibly fascinating what we've given up here and the reality we're living in now.
You know, I had one of my drag children, who I will not name because of the fact that he would be mortified, discovered that his boyfriend was cheating on him by dropping his work phone in the trunk of a car and find my iPhone to find out where he was.
Oh, my God.
I was like, okay, yeah. That is not only sketchy and hyper jealous, that is brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It really stinks, man. I mean, well, but you know what? I'm glad he found out.
So,
good job. Good sleuthing.
You mentioned how the industry has changed, and I 100% agree that we have come from a time, for example, when there was such thing as, quote, TV stars and then, quote, movie stars. You know, people who did television stayed in television generally, and they might dabble in film, and people who did film would usually make cameo appearances or whatever on TV shows. But now there seems to be much more flexibility for actors to go back and forth between the mediums. And you, among others, seem to be making a tremendous use of that. Because it seems like your goal is not to always do the next huge budget film or the big budget, you know, project. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the changing world that actors are in.
From an actor's perspective,
yeah.
And I think I do have probably a different perspective than a lot of actors because I am in a really privileged position. But, I mean, I've seen the business change in so many ways, you know. Now, there was a time where, like, even on this project I'm working right now on, and it's a TV, you know, miniseries thing, but, like, Ben Stiller is directing it and Paul Dano's in it and Benicio del Toro and me. And there's this other great part, and I was like, man, just go cast it with, like, an actor who needs a chance, you know? You don't need another celebrity. You have enough celebrities in this. Give someone a shot. When I started, low-budget movies, like $8 million movies, I mean, they knew that they had to cast kind of a lot of unknowns, give people chances more. Now, low-budget movies are still, you know, $8 million and below.
Which is absurd that that's a low-budget movie, by the way. But I get it.
I know. This is 32 years later. I mean, but now they expect, like, big stars to be in all these low-budget movies. And actors coming up are really given a lot of chances to do things. So I think that's bad. I mean, the event of cheaper technology. I mean, you can make a movie on your cell phone. That is really exciting. I think the art medium is better for it because when more people have access to telling their story, and I think this is just going to become more and more the case. That's one of the positive things of technology. But the movie business has changed a lot. Our union has become weaker, which I think is part and parcel to all unions in America becoming weaker. And yeah, I just think it's a more corporate thing. And it's interesting, I mean, it really is global, too. When your agents, your manager are talking about projects, and they're talking about globally things, and who means something in the box office worldwide, or in China, or all of these things, that's more a global economy.
Yeah, a lot of times studios in particular, or those who produce films, look at, okay, we might take a hit in the United States, but we really think this is going to be successful in China, or and we'll recoup our costs and our expenses because of that, or whatever.
So it's always a shifting marketplace, and it's very interesting the way that it is. I mean, and it's hard to really define value because there's so many different kind of matrices you could look at. So I just try to be like, you know what, that's not my problem. Take me out of that. I just want to be an artist. And I don't want to have to think like a business person.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I pay you guys for, so just don't tell me about all that crap.
Just give me a good script.
Yeah. I don't want to worry about what the world wants, but the business, what the rules are from the business and what they perceive that value. And I mean, value is such a weird thing anyway. Like, you know, I won the Oscar. I was no different than I was the day before, but suddenly you realize that people perceived you as the more value. And it was really like a weird, trippy experience to see other people's, the way they looked at you differently.
Yeah, that's something that I've always wondered about, Patricia, because there have been people who've had wildly successful careers previous to an Oscar win, and then they win the Academy Award, and I don't know if it's an actuality or a perception, but it seems like the roles that are offered them become very different or diminished because suddenly the person's perceived as having a more value, and perhaps they're not even given roles that they might have been offered because they don't have the status that they think that that person would require, or, you know.
Well, they think they'll be too expensive, or they think, I don't know what they think, but I think that does happen. There is like some kind of a weird shift, or they think, well, we'll never get them, or they think all these different things. I think that definitely does happen.
I've seen actors who I felt like, well, you know what? I don't think it's as many actors as actresses that once an actress wins one of these big awards, suddenly, the roles just dry up. I mean, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, like, I really enjoyed the stuff that Halle Berry did before she won the Oscar, and I can't remember anything that she's done pretty much since then. You know what I mean? It's like,
I know, and I don't understand it. She's awesome.
Yeah, and she's gorgeous and talented.
I mean, they do say there's like an Oscar curse. You know, it's not just you saying that. But I don't know exactly what that is. I think there's also something in the business that they always want to be the one to find something or...
Right.
I don't know. They always want, especially when it comes to women, some kind of fresh blood. So even if it's not someone they haven't seen before, they kind of want to break them, be the one to break them through or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't really know what it's about, but also, I mean, I believe, like, we go through, we have experiences to grow, and I definitely know everything timed out, like, perfectly. Like, movies fell apart, and then I was able to be home and help take care of Alexis at different times, and, you know, different things like that that are outside the public view, but that are perfect, you know, that I would have been freaking out if I couldn't have done.
I do believe that life has a way of happening exactly as it needs to happen, if that makes any sense, because I think that in my own experience, when something that, for example, seems cushy or comfortable or reliable dries up suddenly, then it, and this is something I'm going through personally, like I had a job for 7 years, and I
felt very comfortable and cushy in it. I felt protected and secure. And then it recently came to an end. And what I discovered, first, I went through panic. I'm probably still in a little panic. But then I realized, like, well, my creativity element dried up because this was something that I took for granted. Like, okay, I'm always going to have this paycheck. And I don't have to be creative. I don't have to stimulate myself. And then when that went away, suddenly now I find myself with a lot more motivation to do things that probably I've wanted to do for a long time, but didn't, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've been working on a book. I'm on the last few, on my first draft, the last few chapters of my first draft. I wouldn't have been able to do that. I'm going to direct a movie and just starting to prep for that and meet writers and go over all that. I wouldn't have been able to do that either. So I'm glad that I wasn't doing a bunch of movies right now. You know, I think there's always an opportunity in something, and I love that you're seeing it that way, and opening up your creative self to... You know, that's part of what I love about making movies, frankly. It's really different than a long-term TV thing is at the end of the movie, it's like, okay, that's over. I have no idea what's next. What's the next adventure? Who knows?
I think that that's a really wonderful way. I mean, it's a difference between creative types and other types. Like, you and I probably gain a... like an adrenaline rush from that. Okay, what am I going to make happen next? What am I going to bring to reality and fruition next? And then there are those people who are probably like, you know what? I enjoy constant safety and security.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think everybody has that skill set to be adaptive like that.
Yeah.
And I think it is a good skill set to have, especially if you're an artist, but in any event, I mean, even politically, when we're talking about people who could lose health care, you know, depending on the new health plan, if their employer, you know, fires them or goes out of business, the likelihood that a person in any field is going to work at the same job their whole life until they retire is minuscule, almost minuscule.
Especially in this day and age.
We all have to somehow think, how can we be adaptive to change and how can we, you know, best handle change and the opportunity of change.
So there is something and you can absolutely not discuss this if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
But the more recent reports of Alexis's passing touch on the fact that her death was as relations of long-term HIV infection and AIDS. And mm-hmm. that wasn't reported initially. And I think that for many people in this day and age, the idea of someone in the United States specifically passing away of AIDS is still shocking.
Yeah.
This is Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar, and you've been listening to the first half of our two-part interview with Oscar-winning actress Patricia Arquette, as we are beginning to discuss Patricia's sister, Alexis Arquette, a transgender activist and actress, passed away in 2016 as a result of complications from HIV and long-term infection with AIDS. That will be a huge segment of our interview next week on Party Foul Radio, episode 86. We hope that you will join us. It is moving, touching, enlightening, and absolutely educational. It's a must-listen. Please join us next week for Party Foul Radio 86. Meanwhile, let's take a break with our sponsors, and we'll be back to wrap up this episode in just a moment.
And you're listening to Party Foul Radio.
Oh, she really came that way? All right.
My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right.
I need to get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Foul Radio.
I don't get cute, I get drop dead gorgeous.
Party Foul Radio is proudly sponsored by Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. For all of your personal lubrication needs, from water-based and silicone-based lubricants to anal creams, masturbation creams, much, much more, pick up Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants at a fine retailer near you. That's Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants, a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. All right, and we are back with more Party Foul Radio. That was Oscar winner Patricia Arquette in the first half of two epic pieces of an interview that I conducted with her about 10 days ago. As you heard, it was very, very emotional. In the second half, I promise you guys, you need to come back for episode 86 next week. The second half...
You should be coming back every week, though.
You should be coming back every week. And if you... like, decide to come back intermittently, at least follow us on Facebook
and Twitter
so you know what's going on. That's at Party Foul Radio. But anyway, you'll definitely not want to miss the second half of Patricia's interview. She is incredible. And I will say that I'm certainly a fan of her work, but after speaking to her so extensively, I'm a fan of Patricia Arquette as a human being.
Oh.
She is an incredible, incredible person. And I think that with people like her in the world, basically exposing injustices, speaking up for people. I mean, girl, it takes a big person, I think, to say from go, like, look, I've always been in a position of privilege. And if I don't use that my privilege to help people who are less privileged, then what am I? What kind of person am I? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think that's... Anyway, come back next week for that. Meanwhile, speaking of this coming weekend, what is on your agenda for the weekend, Pearl?
You know, this weekend was going to be another weekend for me, but I went ahead and took... Oh, my God.
Sorry, I have a drinking problem, y'all. I just spilled my drink all down my front.
So, originally...
Which is better than spilling it all down my back, I guess.
I was tentatively booked for this show, and it was a friend of a friend's birthday, and they're going up to wine country, and...
All you have to say is a show in wine country, and Pearl's there, bitch.
Well, the thing is, the show would have been on the bus to wine country.
That's cool, though. That
would have been amazing. But the thing is, like, there were so many things that weren't figured out about the show, and they waited till this week to get back to me, and by that time, I had already booked another show. So this weekend, you can actually find me over at the Lookout on Saturday for Carney's Femme Brunch.
Oh, very nice.
And that starts, I believe, at 1:30 at the Lookout.
Flawless. What else are you doing?
Do
you
have that is going... That's going to be it, because I... Yes, that's it. That's it. That's all the drag that I'm willing to give this weekend.
Well, you guys, I forgot earlier in the show to give a shout out to my homegirl, Ms. Perez. Ms. Perez is a performer from down in San Diego. She does a lot of the casino circuit down in San Diego. And she was in town this weekend. She and I did a birthday party, a private birthday party together on Saturday. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed working with you, Ms. Perez. It was lovely meeting you and getting to know you a little bit and spending time together. This coming weekend, I am not exactly sure what I'm doing. I do know that I'm at the Port Bar on Sunday night with Carney Asada for another comedy night. It's going to be Carney and Woo Woo and myself. We're going to be over there tearing it up for the Oakland peeps. So if you're in the East Bay and you want to come out, definitely do so. We look forward to seeing you there. I look forward to seeing you there. You better bring some dollars, bitch, because I'm going to have to take BART to get there. I'm going to need BART fare to get home, bitch. Mm-hmm. And I... Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I might be doing the Divas Royale show on Saturday. My weekends right now are kind of up in the air a lot, and I don't really know, but I'm certainly working. If you are a fan of this podcast, I'm working real hard to have launching within about 10 days. My new podcast is going to be called Arm Drag Takedown, Pollo Del Mar's Pro Wrestling Recap for the Week. I'm going to have on some of my friends from pro wrestling and some people that I'm a big fan of. We'll be talking strictly pro wrestling. I know that a lot of you probably have become very aware, keenly aware of my love for pro wrestling on this podcast. Oh no, what happened, girl?
There's something that I forgot we need to mention.
Uh-oh, Pearl forgot something.
One thing, super shout out to the family of Kendra Monroe, who recently passed, who
yes.
is a San Francisco legend here in San Francisco. She recently passed. She was a fighter of ALS and lost her battle to that, I believe, this past weekend. And on top of that, we also should give a shout out to one of our listeners, Miss Sable Jones, who this, I believe, is her last week here in San Francisco before she makes her move out to Atlanta.
Well, hopefully, Sable Jones,
And it's also her birthday today, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday, well, bitch!
When she hears this, it'll be her birthday yesterday.
So
happy belated, girl.
Anyway, girl, what we're hoping is because you are, in fact, a loyal listener, Miss Sable Jones, we're hoping that when you hit Atlanta, you make some new friends over in Atlanta, you'll be like, you have to listen to these two hoes from up in the Bay Area. They's funny bitches.
Yep.
So I really hope that you'll listen and share the love there in Atlanta, bitch. That's how we're going to gain an audience. You need to just keep moving from place to place and just spreading the love. I do want to give a shout out also to my little buddy, Will Baker. This past weekend, I met, he's now a friend. He's from Washington, D.C., and he was in the Bay Area for Folsom Street Fair weekend. And y'all know I have a damn bleeding heart. I have a bleeding heart, girl.
Maybe like a missing heart, girl.
Whatever, you bitch. But he was in the Bay Area and he was in a situation that was really uncomfortable for him. And he's 20 years old. And he was staying with some people who were sort of taking advantage of the situation. And he told me about it. And I was like, bitch, I got an air mattress. You can come sleep at the end of my bed like Dobby the house elf.
Oh.
You can be Dobby to my Harry Potter. So he slept here for the weekend. And he just went home to Washington, D.C. So we hope that we get a new listener and some fans out there in the Washington, D.C. area just from...
Come on, Dobby.
Master has given Dobby a shock.
What? I didn't...
Master has presented Dobby with clothes. Dobby is free.
Come on, Dobby. Dobby... Master, give Dobby a sock?
Oh, God.
Anyway, by the way, the bitch... Like Dobby, he left a sock up in here.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. I was like, sorry, bitch, you forgot your sock. I guess that means you're not set free after all.
Well.
So, anyway, yes, Disabled Jones, good luck in your future endeavors out there in Atlanta. Also, a quick shout out to Miss Shugana and Mad Dog 2020, who are the newly crowned Grand Duke and Grand Duchess of San Francisco.
Huge congratulations.
Congratulations to both of them. Congratulations to our loyal listener and frequent Knob Hill correspondent, Lexi Shimmers, on her efforts to become Grand Duchess as well. You represented yourself well, and we are pleased to see that you continue to want to be participatory in the community. We'll have to have you back on the show to tell us all about your exploits. Girl, look at the bright side, bitch. If you were Grand Duchess, you wouldn't be able to spend all those long hours in those 100-person circle jerks up at the Knob Hill Theater, bitch.
Right.
It would have really cut into your circle jerking time. So, at any rate, all of that and much more. There's a lot going on in the Bay Area, and we always try to keep you abreast of it here on Party Foul Radio while bringing you the biggest news from around the world. To all of our listeners everywhere, thank you for making us, once again, Podomatic's number one LGBT podcast. This is months in a row, boo.
Right, and don't forget to follow us, like we said earlier.
Party Foul Radio, girl.
On Facebook and Twitter.
Until next time, I am Poyet Almar.
And I'm Pearl T.
We're out of here.
Bye. It's so fun.